the afternoon kitchen, where we talk to people involved in the food industry about food and drink, try and get some recipes off them and some good advice. Last week on the show, we had Lorna Salmon, and despite her name, she's a very strict vegetarian. Today, we're going to welcome Pina Broccoli, but I think she eats meat. Is that right, Pina?
I do, yes.
Yeah. Lovely to have you
salmon
on.
Salmon as well.
And salmon too, quite right, yes. Too. You've got an amazing name, Pina Broccoli and Naya. Have I got that
right?
Oh, yes. Been sweating over that one. Your website's called 12culinarystew.com, which is just a brilliant name. Tell us a little bit about who you are, where you are, and what you do.
I'm Canadian, if you can tell by my accent. I'm Italian origin. I moved to the UK about 15 years ago, and I started the blog as a hobby. It still is a hobby. I enjoy writing about food. I come from a foodie background. My father had a restaurant for about 50 years, so I grew up in the restaurant business. And I started the blog to share some recipes. And around that time, 7 years ago, Cambridge was really coming into its own in terms of the foodie scene and a lot of independence. So I wrote much more in the past before the situation now about restaurants and events.
Mm. You call your website a bubbling cauldron of food experiences. And
yes.
There's lots of lovely writing in there and memories and so on. Just tell us about your mum and dad and the kind of things that they cooked and exposed you to at an early age, culinary-wise.
I come from a multicultural background because, born in Canada, and I'm born in the French part of Canada in Montreal, Quebec, and my parents and grandparents immigrated from Italy. And my father's restaurant was a Jewish deli, so we had a lot of Italian foods from both regions where my paternal and maternal roots are. But also my father would bring home a lot of food from the restaurant. So, you know, pastrami on challah bread, matzo ball soup, things like that. My mom made amazing lasagna and gnocchi and things like that. So, and also the neighborhood I lived in was multicultural, a lot of Greek and Lebanese. It's in terms of food, developed a palate early on.
And there was a time when you worked as a translator, specializing actually in books about gastronomy and tourism, right?
Yes, when I started my translation business at the time, I gravitated towards things that really interested me. And it's always great when you're a translator to write about something that you know about. So it just naturally gravitated to, you know, gastronomy and wine and also travel as well.
Yeah. It's not just my imagination, is it? British food. Cambridgeshire cooking has improved massively over the last, 15 or 20 years, just since you arrived, actually, Pina.
Yes. I have to say, I mean, you know, sausages here are amazing. The English breakfast, fish and chips, pies, toad in the hole, Yorkshire puds. I mean, amazing. Absolutely amazing. I mean, those things, like, you just can't get them when you go back to Canada, really. You can't get the flour to make it and things like that. You can't get proper sausages.
Because in the past, you know, we were a bit of an international joke for our cooking. Well, you could hardly describe it as cooking sometimes. And, you know, we were thought of as unadventurous and boring. And there's just been an explosion. What's happened, do you think?
Oh, I think there's just been a lot more interest in multicultural cooking in general. You know, it is a multicultural country that we live in. So there's a lot of those influences as well.
Yeah.
And a lot of chefs doing their take or authentic things being served up that people want to share, and generally have, you know, the British public enjoy food that they brought over from their country, for example.
I also think a lot of people going abroad on holiday and trying the real thing wherever they are and thinking, well, why can't we have that back home, and just making it possible or going out of their way to look for it, hence the number of fantastic little delis and independents and so on.
Yeah, exactly. It's really nice to have access to that here. Things that normally in the past would have been harder to find here, but they're more available as well. Things like, you know, Italian things like 'nduja, which is like a spicy paste that added to pizza or sauces. And everybody sort of knows what 'nduja is, even though they don't know how to pronounce it. It's N-D-U-J-A. But that's something that people are like, oh yeah, in your foodie circles, you know, oh yeah, I know what 'nduja is, I'll put that on my pizza.
Yeah. So you're going to talk us through, first of all, fajitas today. If there's a theme, I know you've been writing your blog since, 2014 or so, quite regularly?
Yeah.
And if there's a theme to it, what is it?
It's basically sharing my food experiences. So I don't consider myself a chef. I don't consider myself a food critic. It's just basically, if it has something to do with food or drink, I'll write about it because I'm enthusiastic about it and I want to share it. And I just want people to know either about that place, that restaurant, or just a recipe that I developed that's really good. And I'll just pop it on there. Like, most people are interested to find out how to make it. So.
Yeah, and you're very popular. I mean, you've been recommended to me. That's how I first got you on the show, wasn't it?
Thank you.
Recommended by a well-known Italian deli owner in Cambridge. So you've got a good reputation there. That's fantastic.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, so Alex Signorelli is just a joy, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
He has so much personality.
Yeah. Well, he knows the real thing too, because he was actually born in Italy. And another one who's moved to Cambridge. We often question ourselves in Britain about whether we're, you know, welcoming to people and what our culture's like. But there we are, so many people like yourselves, you know, born and brought up elsewhere, who moved to the UK. We must have something going for us.
This is my home. I'm a naturalized British citizen. This is, you know, I knew that this is where we're going to be live the rest of my life. So I'm very happy here. But my heritage is important, and also, you know, where I'm from and my hometown and my home country of birth. Yes.
So let's talk about chicken fajitas. You instantly think of Tex-Mex, don't you? Really?
Yeah, I mean, I really like doing Tex-Mex type dishes. I mean, there's Mexican and Tex-Mex origins to it. I do it with chicken. I think the original Tex-Mex is with grilling skirt steak.
Yeah.
But this one, I just chop up some chicken into strips. And it's quite easy, this one. I don't do anything fancy. I just make a nice little marinade with a bit of olive oil, squeeze of fresh lime juice, finely mince a clove of garlic, and then just put, the staple spices like cumin, chili powder, and chili flakes, a bit of salt and pepper. Mix that all up, and then just put the sliced chicken in there in a bowl and leave it there for a bit to marinate. You can marinate it for an hour or 20 minutes or longer if you want. And you're going to be wrapping those in tortilla wraps. So it's nice to have some onions and green peppers for some crunch and contrast. So you would cut an onion into wedges and a green pepper, you cut that into strips. And then you just basically fry that up in a pan and get them, you know, not too soft. You don't want them mushy. So you fry that up in a pan, and then you take it out of the pan and you leave it in a separate dish on the side. And you use the same pan, put a bit more olive oil to it, and cook the chicken in there until it's nicely cooked. And then you just add the vegetables back into just to warm it up. And that's it. And you could bring the whole pan over to the table with some tongs and get your tortilla wraps. I like to grate some cheddar right on the wrap, so it's kind of like the base, and then just pile it on with the fajitas, the cooked chicken. And you can add more toppings. You can add things like chopped tomatoes or guacamole, or I don't usually put anything. I like them just the way they are, and just wrap that up and eat that. And it's fun to eat, and that's it. And it's very quick and easy.
Yeah, and delicious. And I liked what you described at the end there, because sort of casual dining places has become a bit Americanized. But the original fajita, and I've been lucky enough to have it in Mexico City, actually, they bring it to the table in a big dish, the meat and the vegetables all sizzling loudly on a metal platter. And it's just delightful, the smell and the experience of it all. And then, of course, you add on your whatever it is, the guacamole, your salsa, your cheese, and maybe sour cream, things like that.
Yeah, yeah, and you can't beat that sizzle from the restaurant, though. I mean, that's part of the... It's a bit harder to do that at home. You don't want to have that all over the place, but yeah, that's part of the experience. And then you have all your little condiments that you can just do as you like and wrap it up. And it's such a sociable thing to do, isn't it? Communal eating. So we missed that part of that experience.
Yeah, and get some mariachi music on and playing in the background. Just pretend that you're in downtown Mexico City. Listen, we're going to talk some more in a moment or two.
Okay.
I thought we could do one other thing. You've got a drizzle loaf. Can you talk us through that?
Sure, yeah.
The orange rosemary drizzle loaf. We'll talk about that in just a moment or two. So there we are. Pina Broccoli Anaya is our special guest from the website 12culinarystew.com. Lots of great recipes on there. So we've talked about creamy fajitas, and we'll talk you through an orange rosemary drizzle loaf in just a few minutes' time. 25 past two on the afternoon show. It's Chris Mann with my guest, the Cambridgeshire food blogger Pina Broccoli Anaya, whose website is 12culinarystew.com. We've talked about creamy fajitas. We're going to talk now about drizzle loaf, which if you look on the BBC Good Food website, I think it's one of the most requested item. It's just so popular and there's so many varieties of it. Pina, what's your version today?
I make an orange rosemary drizzle loaf, and it's really easy to make. And I have to say, I'm not a baker at all, and it's just something that I started doing the past year because I have more time at home.
Yeah.
So, you know, patisserie and cakes, I'll leave that to the professionals. But it's fun to make my own cakes at home, and I think a loaf is very forgiving, so you can't really get it wrong for someone like me who doesn't bake. And it's a really nice recipe, actually, because it uses fresh oranges, the zest and the juice directly. And the subtle hint of rosemary really complements the citrus. So it's just a really nice loaf, and you can have it with creme fraiche or ice cream.
Just reading on your blog, you make an interesting point, because we try to support local independents as much as we can. And you make the point that you're trying to avoid, nothing against them, they haven't done anything wrong, but you're trying to avoid supermarkets as much as possible, right?
Yes, yes, for safety. And also, you know, discovering a lot more delivery services of having produce, vegetables and fruit in particular, that were normally used to go to restaurants. A lot of suppliers are now supplying, you know, little delis and little shops. So somebody like a place like Meadows in Newnham has wonderful fruit and produce, like the eggs and the oranges that I used for this recipe. Really, really made it just so much more lovely when you use quality.
Great. Well, great to hear about local independents that people can support. I'm sure many people will want to in principle, but and go and explore them and see what they're like. And hopefully, if we use them, they'll still be there down the road, Pina, hey?
Yes.
Okay, talk us through the rest of the orange rosemary drizzle loaf, please.
So basically, you've got your dry ingredients. So you've used about 170 grams of plain flour, some baking powder, bicarbonate of soda, and sugar. I like to use golden caster sugar, but you can use granulated sugar. The golden caster sugar, I find it's better for this cake. It just has more of a molasses flavor, so I would recommend that one. And you basically are using olive oil as well instead of butter, which I prefer in my cakes because it just makes them lighter in texture. And I get the rosemary flavor from the olive oil. I found a really nice rosemary-infused olive oil from Cucina di William, which is a Cambridgeshire company. And I just add that directly. But if you don't have rosemary olive oil, you can just use a little bit of chopped dried rosemary to flavor the cake and the oil. Mm-hmm. So you mix up your dry ingredients, and you're also in a separate bowl. You're beating the eggs in with the olive oil, and you're zesting the whole orange directly into the bowl. And then cut half the orange and squeeze half of its juice into the bowl, and keep the other half for the drizzle. And you just whisk that up. And then you're adding the dry ingredients that you've sieved, so the flour, the baking powder, and the bicarb of soda. And you just mix that. You don't have to use a stand mix or anything. Just your hand and a spoon, a whisk, and mix it well. If you're using the dried rosemary, then just add that in. And then you just put that into a lined loaf tin, cook it for about 40 minutes, and that's it. And then you make the drizzle. And that's just basically 50 grams of sugar and the juice of the other half of the orange. And you just put a few holes in the loaf, and then just pour it over. And then you could just keep just pouring it over, and then the drizzle will become crispy. So it'll have a sort of like a nice crispy top, and then you just remove it from the tin, and you've got a lovely cake that you can have with creme fraiche or ice cream or just on its own. It's really nice.
Cup of tea. Yeah. the sugar will form a lovely crisp topping, won't it?
Yeah, it's really nice, yeah.
The juice will sink in. And you probably leave it in the tin until cool, and then remove and serve. That'll keep in an airtight container for what, 3-4 days?
Yeah, yeah. It usually doesn't last that long.
Well, there is that.
I like to share it with neighbors as well. They will have a slice of cake, and make sure it's cool before you seal it, or else it'll just get too moist. Get wet. So yeah.
And it's one of those things you can make a batch of and then freeze for a month and get out and so on. But it's a great adventure. Particularly maybe at half term when the kids are at home and do some of that.
Yes.
Well, thank you as ever for joining us, Pina.
It was my pleasure.
When will you be putting something, new things back up on the website? How often do you change it?
I guess it just depends when I have time to do it, or if I'm cooking and I go, you know what, I'll take some photos and write this up. And I know I said that last time, but I'm still planning to do the mushroom risotto because that is such a good recipe and I've never managed to write it all down and get all the photos. So you just encouraged me to do that.
Well, quite. And we're talking with Chris Haslam of the Sunday Times later on after four about this whole business of, are we actually going anywhere this summer? Because it does seem that there's the picture overseas is changing somewhat and we might not get abroad. But if you had the chance, of all the places that you've been or maybe haven't been, where would you pick to go on your holiday this summer if you get the chance? Pina?
Well, for me, it's easy because I'm going to go back to Canada. My sisters are in Montreal. My son is at University of Toronto. So that is just the first place I'm going to go and stay for a month or 6 weeks or something. I just miss everyone so much. And there's such great cities, Toronto and Montreal and everywhere in between. So that's where I want to go. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest today. Hope to speak to you very soon.
Excellent. It was nice. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Pina Broccoli. Thank you for being there from 12culinarystew.com. Tomorrow.